final speaker, we have Dr. Bradley. She and colleagues support the Interprofessional Care Access Network, ICANN, a model for faculty-led interprofessional student teams who provide neighborhood care coordination for vulnerable clients. Dr. Bradley will report on the project's evaluation and how these results enhance the team's understanding of the complexity of the challenges facing underserved communities. And they used the outcomes from this project to identify population-level interventions to guide faculty and partner development and increase collaboration between the school and the community. Let's welcome Dr. Bradley to the podium.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being here this afternoon. What a fascinating panel to be with. So I wanted to talk with you a little bit about a program that we're running at Oregon Health and Science University. And first of all, I have no relationships and nothing to disclose in contrast. The presentation today is going to talk about what we call our ICANN project. It's an interprofessional collaboration at the university. Talk a little bit about our clients and their profile, the emerging themes of some of what we've been learning, and the evaluation challenges that will be threaded throughout much of this discussion and what we've learned from this. So first of all, while I assume most of you probably might know where Oregon is, Oregon Health and Science University is located in Portland. That's its home base. The School of Nursing, that was the receiver of the HRSA grant for this, actually has its home university in Portland, and then has four other campuses around the state, and those are the ones that are in blue. And so in the modeling that we did with this, we initially started our first year in Portland. The second year we went to our Medford campus, which is the southern one down there in a red star. And then actually this third year we're expanding into a refugee community over in East Portland. But what I'll be reporting out is on the first two years in Portland and down in Medford. So the goals of ICANN were to build interprofessional collaborative partnerships, and this really built on work we've been doing for over a decade. What we had found is that all of our different schools were working, particularly in the Portland area, so whether it was medicine or dentistry or nursing, we would be working in these communities, we'd be educating our students, we'd have our own models and approaches, but nothing was done in terms of collaboration. And so what this grant did for the first time is let us really work together and say, how can we do this and bring teams of students together to work together in our communities, and then also, how can we really engage with our communities and build their capacity? So it's less about taking from the community, but actually supporting and growing with the community. And then certainly with the kind of clients that we were working with, we wanted to improve health outcomes and their satisfaction with services, and then build the capacity for leading interprofessional teams within our students. In the School of Nursing, what we had were our baccalaureate students who were in their fourth year of community health, School of Medicine, second and third year. We have a global health center which does population-type education and has special services that they provide an interprofessional context for that we're a part of this partnership. We have a joint college of pharmacy, and then we also have our School of Dentistry. So you can sort of see the mix of schools, and I loved the comment made earlier by my colleague about schedules. I'm not going to talk about schedules, but we could spend an hour on schedules. So what we did is we formed neighborhood collaboratives, and again, this built on work that we'd already been doing in partnership with relationships that we had. And so we were working in neighborhoods that we knew. We had at least one healthcare organization, a community health center or a federally qualified health center that was a basis there, several of the community service agencies, and then the academic partners. And then we formed a team that we evaluated, and we meet with on a quarterly basis to sort of see how the work is going and having the students report out and share that. So it really is a collaborative. And what's been so interesting is even for the agencies within their own communities, this really has enhanced some of their working relationships that didn't necessarily exist before. So these are the two neighborhoods that I'll be reporting out on today and the two populations. One is in what's called the Old Town neighborhood of Portland, and as you can see, it's predominantly not just low income, but a lot of homeless, disabled veterans, a lot of elders. And then in West Medford, which is the southern part of the state, it is a little more geared, and we have families that we've dealt with more, some of the Hispanic immigrants and our seasonal workers. So very different populations that we've worked with in both of these communities. And then in each of these communities, what we've done is we have what we call faculties in residence. So we have a nursing faculty that partners as the lead with the organizations and is the continuous presence there, is the lead with the other faculty from the other schools, and then works with the student teams and those relationships there. In Old Town, these were some of what we were looking for when we looked for referral criteria, because we were trying to identify the clients that fell between the cracks. The clients that didn't turn up for appointments, had a lot of things going on in their lives, weren't really managing them particularly well. So this was what we sort of had identified in terms of referral criteria. The community resources would refer clients into us, and then the student team with the faculty member would meet with them and sign them on to work with us in our service if they wanted to. And then in the second year when we worked with families, since we were adding that with the family component, we added different criteria that might adapt and identify families that were more at risk, particularly around school absences, family members that had chronic illness, and the signs of child negligence. It's a very specific term here. It's negligence. It's not child neglect. So it's just an awareness of that, that we've got some criteria around. And then in terms of outcomes, what we had identified originally, and this was a three-year grant project that we started with, is that we would have some short-term outcome measures around increasing the number of clients who had health insurance, primary care homes, and some stable housing, and then a longer-term outcomes of reducing EMS calls, visits, and hospitalizations, and increased satisfaction. So this was five school terms that we were looking at this data from April 13th to May, April 2013 to this last May. So this evaluation data that I'm sharing with you, we've got 56 clients overall that were referred from six agencies. We had over 600 administrative and service visits. A service visit was a face-to-face visit with a client that involved interaction with some members of the student team, a faculty member somewhere in the area, not necessarily with them, sometimes with them. The administrative visits were ones where they were either making arrangements to meet the client or doing a lot of the other detailed work. If they were dealing on housing issues with clients, then they were making phone calls and trying to work on housing issues. If they were trying to work on insurance or they were trying to work on, establishing a primary care providers, there were a lot of conversations that had occurred around that. What I can share you is with our administrative service visits, we have about two-thirds administrative visits to one-third service. So that gives you an idea of the amount of case management work that really needs to go on with these clients. The other thing here is we've got 11 clients for a follow-up assessment. So the way we set our initial criteria, which I'll speak to a little bit in a minute, is that after 12 visits, then we would do a follow-up assessment. And so after five quarters in here, we only had 11 clients that had actually achieved that 12th visit. And there are some specific reasons for that, which I will talk about as part of the challenges of our evaluation. And we only have eight clients as of last May that had completed both pre- and post-data. So the other challenge this was presenting us, and we had figured out that we had some of these issues going on by about the second term, is it also shifted us heavily into a qualitative model of what we were going to be doing. The students do collect information on the clients when they're brought into the program with an intake assessment. They have notes that they enter into a data system that we have. So we have the client notes that we could do qualitative assessment on, and that's a part of the data analysis that we added into the work that we were doing. These have improved, but I'll talk more about them in a minute. So of the original, the full group of clients of the 56, this is what you can see. It's about, not little uneven, a little heavier male, 57% male to female. It is predominantly English speaking at this time because it was based in Portland. We picked up some Spanish speaking down in Medford. We're picking up many other languages right now and cultures as we're moving into our refugee population. In the other population, we had several clients who were hard of hearing or deaf, and so we're working with those adaptations. You'll notice that in education, about 40% had a high school education or less. And then we had a fairly broad age span, a lot of them in the 40 to 64 range, which was not surprising considering the Old Town neighborhood we were working in. I'll make a comment here about missing data because I'll talk a little bit more about that as well. We did have a lot of problems with data as we were doing data collection and the data components, and so we still have a lot of missing data that we're having to backfill on. But I'll address that in a minute. So this is the first thing. This is the challenge of engaging clients. So this was in, these are community health clients. These are low-income individuals. Many of them live on their own. A small number of them do have family or others. They have difficulty coping with systems. They have difficulty managing their lives. They get referrals to us from their community centers that they're in touch with. So then they go into the community center. They're recognized as being at risk. The referral is made. So contacting those clients, engaging those clients is a huge challenge. Some of them, many of them, don't have phones. Others, you may be able to reach, but only if they make an appointment with you, and then when you initially follow up, trying to catch them and capture them is difficult. So this issue of the fact that we only ended up with 24 clients ongoing that were participants, and we had 27 that withdrew, reflected a lot of the complexity of those. We had a number of clients that dropped out because they ended up being hospitalized. We had several clients that had deaths. We had clients that moved out of the area. We had clients that moved with family. These are very transitory people. They have a lot of transitions that are going on in their lives. So trying to identify, engage, and then sustainably engage in an intervention is a real challenge. On the other hand, this is a critical need in our communities because many of these, their providers are frustrated with them. Their closest network happens to be the social system they have through their community systems. And the students are an invaluable resource and part of this that can really be learning a tremendous amount from a professional perspective about clients, as well as really bringing in a great resource. We actually only had 5 that didn't consent, that didn't want to participate. But as you can tell, you know, we had a significant number, over half, that were lost to follow-up over time. So of these, again, just to sort of reinforce the complexity of their lives, you know, in terms of things like health literacy, identifying their medications, they were at about 25 to 50% for health literacy. Their quality of life runs at about 59% overall. You can see that they had a high utilization of health care. These were one of some of the questions we asked, is in the previous 6 months, have you visited an ER or gone to a hospital? So you can see there's a high utilization of use, inappropriate use, which was one of the things we were trying to tackle in terms of addressing that in a more holistic way. Also, they have a lot of difficulty in terms of primary care homes, any kind of stable housing, and lack of health insurance. Now, this did precede, obviously, the implementation of the ACA and a lot of work around recruitment and health insurance. But also, just because these clients have a card doesn't mean they know how to use them or they're in systems that know how to work with them. So the students had a tremendous amount of work acclimating and working with clients and systems. And then again, these were very client-centered. We talked with the clients about what did they want, what kind of goals did they have. And as you can see, the social determinants continue to run through this. Over half really wanted to work on issues around seeing a provider. Housing was also about 50%, and then 35% were around health insurance. But those core social determinants continue to run through this. These were great experiences for our students, and I'm not talking much about the students at this time in this evaluation, but just would reinforce some of what else we've heard. For the students, their engagement in this was not as a medical student or a nursing student or as much as a pharmacy student, but as to really understand the complexities that these clients lived with and to be part of the problem solving of social determinants and understanding social determinants, because they may all be working around housing issues. But it also helped them really appreciate how difficult it would be for those people to deal with their type 2 diabetes if they didn't have housing, you know, if they didn't have regular food, if they were in a place that they didn't feel safe. So it really was that reinforcement that we were looking for. And then also nearly half of these clients, their meetings took place either at their home or elsewhere. So a number of these people in their housing, we had some that did not have homes, that they were transitory, that they lived in single occupancy homes. So the students went to where they felt comfortable, either in the community or in their setting. And again, the other piece of 83 minutes for a client visit on average tells you about the challenge of engaging, effectively sort of spending time with that client and trying to have some interactions. We do have some small numbers with the 8. We are well aware of issues of small numbers, so we're just simply sharing some of this as an observation at this time and are looking forward to when we've got further data this next year when we've got more to report. But out of that N of 8 that had a second, had full 12 weeks and we actually were able to do a second assessment, we had fewer hospitalizations, ED visits, EMS call-outs, and surprisingly fewer provider visits, which we need to understand because mostly we were engaging people more with providers and expected that to come out. But this is some of what we are driving at. It was appropriate utilization and engagement because we were getting people to address systems. So this is where we're continuing to do work around cost avoidance. So I wanted to speak a little bit about what we had emerging themes, and this comes from some of our qualitative research. So again, this was the student notes that they wrote up about their interactions with the clients and some of what we saw that came out of that. And so the instability of housing actually was predominant with this population, and it's not surprising. But it, again and again, it was the issue that had to be addressed. And it wasn't simply a continuum of finding housing from beginning to end, but they may have housing, and then they were evicted, and then they had housing, and then they were out, and then they were staying with a friend, and that really wasn't a good situation. So the complexities and the flexing of housing was very dynamic. So you can see there the sort of numbers of living in a house or an apartment that were rentals, a single room occupancy temporarily, and then we did have a fairly large percentage that were part of this missing data. The missing data was a challenge because when we engaged in this, we have students that are involved in this process. They enter information. We had faculty that were double-checking what they were doing, but I don't think they appreciated in the beginning the significance of how much data we really needed to be closely monitored. So one of the things that our evaluation team ended up doing is they work with the monthly faculty meetings, and we provide quality improvement feedback. We provide data back to them, and they've really been much better at being engaged and really monitoring and working with the students. And we're doing the same thing with students each term so that they understand the importance of checking all the kind of boxes we need to have, because so much of this is check boxes. The other really significant theme that we had, we talked about primary social supports with so many of these people to find out information, and we gathered that. And what you'll see here is what people are counting as their primary social supports are not who you would think. I would think it was a friend. I would think it was maybe a family member or a partner. It's not. Their social supports come from the community and are the social networks that they have there that are reflect these people, their social worker and their caseworker, which means it's incredibly important that we support those social systems that are there. But these people are very isolated in terms of having very much family or support around them. Client follow-up was a huge challenge, and these are a couple of examples of what we sort of, our students sort of quoted in terms of looking at things, and it just sort of reinforces some of those issues of follow-up, a tremendous amount of work that would go into it. One of the things we did after a while actually is, and this is part of the sort of the evaluation, is we identified that if we had clients that after three visits we couldn't reach, we backed off, and either we didn't enroll them, or if we hadn't been engaged with them and we couldn't meet them, we put them over to the side. So we started to understand how to limit some of the engagement of our faculty and our students to better use their time, and that's been part of some of the real learnings that we've had with this. They have a limited ability to navigate systems, and that's fairly well known. And so these are just a couple of quotes that come from some of them, but the inability of understanding how some behavior of theirs has impacted the system, and that the, as a long-term implication is not something, and that's something the students have had to work with them extensively. And then certainly the comorbidity of addiction and mental health. None of these are new or unique in the literature or from the research, but it really brings it home to our students when they're really beginning to understand the impact of the difficulties these clients have in managing their lives, and then maybe that's why they're not actually be able to achieve the health goals we assume that they should be able to achieve. So just sort of in summary, some of the evaluations lessons we've learned so far. You know, one is we actually started as a quantitative evaluation. We added qualitative, and obviously with populations like this, a mixed method evaluation is critical. The real challenge of locating and engaging patients and clients and community was something that we knew a lot about. We've been involved with these communities for 10 years, but actually really shifting to a new model and implementing that and bringing in student teams was extremely complicated. The complexity and the impact of social determinants, again, as much as we thought we knew those fairly well, I think the engagement and understanding, and we've talked now about building not really critical pathways, but maybe some best practice pathways so that the students who have learned a lot about some of the housing mechanisms and ways to do them can pass those on to other students. We're trying to sort of build better efficiencies into the system. And then in terms of measurement, the challenges that you see here are also some of the same that I've mentioned earlier. The last one that I'll speak to just briefly is stabilization and churn. We've had a lot to do with developing new instrumentation that really would reflect the kind of work that we're doing. We're not even particularly happy with some of the things we selected on this first round, and we would make different choices now. That's how this has informed us. But this is an example of the churn and stabilization indices that we have used with some adaptations about what kind of churn has occurred in your life, what kind of stabilization, and what we are hoping to see more of is that with clients that have been working with our students that we get some stabilization. For some that's long term, for some that will simply be short term, but it's part of the environment they're in. So this is our grant and academic team, and I do want to acknowledge two of our faculty, our project manager and our faculty in residence, Heather and Lana Ray are here that represent both Portland and Medford, so they've got great examples to share with you, and then also the acknowledgement of the grant. So thank you very much.